Yisrael was a great individual. I mean, by the mere fact that he was the father of Moshe Rabbeinu, that, you know, he's much more than that. But aside from that, we see after the miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf that he alone came forth to meet with Moshe and to find out, to investigate the subject. Because Chazal pointed out, it says, when he heard the story, he praised God, and he says, now I know that God is greater than all the gods. So Rashi asks, what do you mean all greater than all the gods? There are no other gods. So Rashi says, it comes to teach us the statement that I know that God is greater than all the gods. It teaches us that he was familiar with every idol in the world. That there wasn't one idol in the world that he had not investigated. He'd worshipped. And the question is, what is this telling us about Yisrael? Is that a compliment or is that a criticism? So the way I explained it was that it's trying to tell us something about him. That is, because the question is, why is it that Yisrael alone, of all people, was moved by the event? I mean, they didn't have the same communication that we do, but what happened at the Kriyas Yamsuf was known throughout the world. It says in the Shira, Namo Kol Yoshvei Kanan. And this was a tremendous opportunity for the world to gain a true knowledge of God, to move away from idolatry, to discover God. God had revealed himself. This is what they call Gilui Shechina. This is the revelation of the presence of God. And only one person came forward. And who was that person? An idolater. Which means that he worshipped every idol in the world. It means that he was a person who by nature was searching for the truth. And since he was searching for the truth, he had no choice. He had to go by the system, the religion. So whatever he saw, he would look into it, he would practice it, and then when he saw that it wasn't satisfactory, he would abandon it. He went on to the next one. But because he was in that frame of mind, when the real truth did manifest itself, the revelation did come, he was in a position to take advantage. He investigated, and he adopted the system, he converted to Judaism. So you see that Yisro was a great man. You also see in Parsha Yisro the way Moshe treated him. That Moshe came out with Aaron and the greatest men, and they spent time with him, and they ate together with him. They had, they spent time together. So obviously, he would not have been accorded that kind of respect unless he was a great man. Now after this, so that's the first episode with Yisro. It says that Yisro rejoiced. Take a look at Pasuk Tet. Yichad Yisro, I'll call it Tova. Yisro, now that word by Yichad, the plain level, it means that he rejoiced for all the good that God had done to Israel, that he had saved Israel from the hands of Egypt. But there's an interesting statement of Chazal on Vayichad, because the word Vayichad can mean rejoicing, but the word Chad also means sharp. Vayismach Yisrael, Zeh Pshuto, the plain shot is that he rejoiced. The Medrash Agada, quoted by Rashi, of course the Medrash, Soro, Naseh B'Soro, Chadudim Chadudim. His skin became like pimples, like goose pimples. He broke out into goose pimples. Yisrael. Meitzar al Ibud Mitzrayim. He was saddened. He was upset by the destruction of Mitzrayim. Hainu D'yarm Yinshi, this is what people say, Giyor Adasar Dari, a convert for 10 generations, well, Tivzei Armor Biapet. You should not embarrass a Gentile. In other words, you shouldn't make fun out of a Gentile to their face. That's an interesting lesson, by the way. In other words, that's the halacha, that in front of a convert, and it's, we're living in a society today, there are a lot of converts. I mean, genuine, some death or not. So sometimes you forget yourself. You don't do it intentionally, but they live amongst Jews and everything. And then occasionally you're talking about Gentiles and you sort of make fun out of it. You put down the 10 generations, right? You're not allowed to put down a Gentile. Like a joke, even if it's not a terrible thing. A Geisha cup, like I said, that kind of thing. Or, with no intention. You're not intending to hurt this person, but sometimes it affects the person. Now what is this saying over here? What's the idea? What is the idea? What's the relationship over there? On the surface it indicates, the pshat doesn't seem to be in line with the medrash. The medrash is telling us that he was upset by the news. The plain pshat is telling us that he was happy with the news. It seems to be a contradiction. Usually the Medrash is a further extension of the plain shot. Here the plain shot says that he rejoiced. The Yisrael rejoiced.
So
you're saying, is this an indication of his perfection? That he was on a high level?
We do that ourselves, and every year at the Seder, that's why we
call it Sunday. What you're saying is correct. It is correct, but that's not the Shah. I don't believe that's the Medrash. I think I can prove it. The Vita wants to say that the Medrash is really praising Yisrael. That he was really correct in having this reaction, that he rejoiced. But at the same time, it was a rejoicing which was tinged with a certain amount of sadness. Now that would be correct, because we said that the Malach HaAsharis wanted to say Shira. They wanted to praise God. They wanted to sing Shira, to praise God for the miracle of the splitting of the Red Sea. But God rebuked them. But notice that, but the Jews did sing Shira. So, on the one hand you had the Jews singing Shira, they gave praise to God. On the other hand, the angels were not allowed to give praise, because they were bounded by the rule that the work of my hand is drowning in the sea, you're not allowed to sing Shira. Now, I say that this is a critique of Yisrael. In other words, that he was there was a certain ambivalence. Yeah, what did you say? Yes, that the feeling over here, on the one hand he rejoiced because he was on a level where he recognized the greatness of God and was happy that the Jews had been saved, but at the same time he felt a certain amount of sadness. Now that sadness was due to identification. In other words, he still had a certain amount of identification. He had not, in other words, had he been on a higher level, he would have had only rejoicing, because all of his energy would have been directed towards God. And the proof of this is because we deduce from this that it's because he was a ger. In other words, if his sadness was an objective sadness because of the fact that in spite of the miracle, still in all, the works of God's hands were destroyed, then you wouldn't deduce from this the lesson that you're not allowed to embarrass a Gentile in front of a convert. But since Chazal do make that deduction, you see that it was a personal thing. It was a personal thing, which means to say, now what's the cause of that? It means it stems from his emotions of identification. Now why would he still have emotions of identification? That means that he was similar to, he was a tzaddik, he was a righteous person, but he wasn't like Avraham of Eden, which means he did not withdraw all of his energy from you know, the instinctual, from the emotional, from the false way of life. He had not. He lived correctly, but a certain amount of his energy was still attached. Otherwise, he would not identify with these people. All right? Now, what I want to do is like this. I want to go into the next... This is a very fascinating episode. And as I said, I never really... I've gone through it, and I have... You know, I've raised the questions, but I've never really worked it out satisfactorily. And I don't know if I'll do it tonight. So we'll try. So maybe you'll help me out. Okay? Now... From that passing on, he goes on to praise God, and Yisrael said, blessed is God that saved you from the hands of Egypt and from the hands of Pharaoh, who saved the nation from beneath the hands of the Egyptians. Now I know that God is greater than all the gods because of the matter that they had sinned. In other words, the idea being that they were punished in the way that they had, as Rashi says, the expression over there, sought to destroy you with water, and they were destroyed with water. In other words, when God engineered their destruction, it turned out that they weren't just destroyed, but they were destroyed in the very same means that they had used, sought to use, to destroy you with water. So that required a special praise with the original decree was to take the firstborn and throw the firstborn into the water to drown them. In other words, they sought to destroy you with drowning, and they were destroyed in the same way. Now why that's caused the greater rejoicing, what's the reason for that? In other words, Yisrael made a point. In other words, this increased his knowledge of God. Alright, let's read it for Tanya. Then they brought sacrifices to God, and Aaron came and all the elders of Israel to eat with the father-in-law of Moshe before God. That ends part one. But I want to take a part two. It was on the following day. All right, so that Rashi learns that this parsha that we're going to read is not in chronological order. It's not the day after this feast, but really it's the day after. I'm sorry, around 13. Now this is after Matan Torah, the next parsha, and it's after the day after Yom Kippur. Okay, unless you worked out the calculation.
After
Matan Torah. In other words, even though this takes place in Parsha Shishi before the Torah was given, but the Torah doesn't always go in chronological order. Doesn't always follow chronological order. So this particular episode, it makes more sense to learn it that way, that it takes place after the giving of the Torah. Okay? That's how Rashi learns. Starting with Pasuk Yigimel, yes.
Before
that, that's the whole Machlokes too. But you can learn that that's before Matan Torah. There's different commentaries. There's the Ibn Ezra, there's the Ramban, there's a whole discussion. I won't take it up right now. I will point out the problems though. It wasn't the next day, and Moshe sat to judge the people. The people stood by Moshe from morning until evening. Alright? Okay. So Rashi points out that he sat like a king, and they all stood. And Rashi says that this was troublesome to Yisrael, because he wasn't careful about the honor of Yisrael, of Israel. And therefore Yisrael rebuked him on that, as we'll see. Alright? And the father-in-law of Moshe saw that which he was doing to the people. And he said, "What is this that you're doing to the people? Why do you sit alone and the entire people stand by you from the morning until the evening?" Alright? It does seem then that he rebuked them. It's just a fascinating thing. You see? So you have to watch out for your in-laws, because first he came, he's a guest, a visitor, right? A visitor is a guest, and Moshe is a wonderful host and takes great care of him, welcomes him and everything. And the next thing you know, he's already a critic. The father-in-law. Now, let's continue though. So he basically rebukes him. And Moshe didn't take it personally. Moshe said to his father-in-law, "Because the people comes to me, libro shelokim, to search out God." What does that mean, to search out God? Ki yelahem davar by life, they have a problem, they come to me, that is to say a matter of judgment, and I judge between a man and his neighbor, his friend, and I make known to them the statutes of God and his Torah and his teaching. So that was the answer of Moshe answered him. Okay, where is the, I mean, it doesn't, it's not so obvious what exactly the answer was. See, so the father-in-law of Moshe says to him, "It's not good that which you are doing. Lo tova davar asher ata oseh. That which you are doing is not good." And he says, "Nabo kibo, you'll become very weary. Also you, also the people that is with you. For it is much too heavy a burden to bear. You can't carry it alone." Alright? So here he says, you'll become weary, both you and the people. So here he includes Moshe. First the rebuke was for what you're doing to the people. He didn't mention anything about Moshe. But after Moshe answered him, he says, "You'll become sucker for you, sucker for them. They'll become tired, you'll become tired." Well, we'll see. Now he says, "Now listen to my voice, I'll give you advice. I'll give you an eitzah. Yotzah. I'll give you an eitzah, advice. And God will be with you. You should be for the people opposite God." Sort of the intermediary, so to speak, although I hate to use that word. You know, take it in the wrong sense. The interloper. Interlocutor. And you will bring their matters to God. And you will warn them the statutes, concerning the statutes and the teaching, and make known to them the way that they shall go therein, and the actions that they should do. And you should see, really to choose, from the people, powerful men, who fear God, men of truth, who hate ill-begotten gain, falsely acquired money, and place over them heads of thousands, heads of hundreds, heads of 50. In other words, now you have a whole system of organization. And heads of 10. In other words, people who are in command of 10, 50, 100, 1,000. And they will judge the people at all times, and it will be, for any great matter, they'll bring to you. But any small matter, they will judge. And it'll lighten the burden on you, and they'll help you. They'll carry it with you. If you will do this thing, and God will consent, God will command it, then you'll be able to prevail. And also, this entire people will come to its place in peace. So, it's that's interesting. Here, Moshe was subjected to a pretty thoroughgoing critique. He's probably telling Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who went up to God and received the Torah. There was no... I mean, we could just pause on that point to show you something about the nature of Moshe Rabbeinu. There was nobody ever was like him or ever will be. There'll never be another Moshe. Moshe was in a class by himself in terms of his level of Nevuah. And yet, how does he react when a stranger, actually Yisro is basically a stranger, subjects him to a thorough critique and tells him he's doing the wrong thing. He's not functioning, and he's a leader of the people. So Moshe listened to the voice of his father-in-law, and he did everything that he said. So in other words, Moshe Rabbeinu was the expressed the perfection in terms of modesty, in terms of love of the truth. Sure, it's true. And by the way, you see that even a person like Moshe, doesn't mean that Moshe knew everything. There's no such thing as that. When we say that Moshe was at the highest level, there's no such thing as a person that knows everything. See, people like to have that feeling, especially when people are experts, authorities in a field. Done? Yeah, but even in that area, the term expert as an emotional as well as a practical. And sometimes you have to use, you know, you have to go to an expert. But the person himself should never regard himself as an expert. Because once you consider yourself, you take yourself too seriously. You think you're an expert. Then you look at that in a different light. You look at yourself in a different light. Yes, exactly. In other words, who are you to tell me? I'm the expert. And very often it just so happens that in the world of reality, a non-expert can see things that the experts don't see. On the whole, of course, you go, you know, on a day-to-day, you go to the expert. But very often, an expert himself has certain inherent limitations. Because due to the very fact that you're following a prescribed technique and so on and so forth, your mind is already set. Now, therefore, very often, an outsider who's sharp and doesn't have these constraints can look into a situation and say, why don't you do it that way? They could see things that you would never even look at because you're following the method. The method, of course, works best in most cases. But sometimes a layman can just see something. Now what's the reaction of the expert? Do you see? Who are you? So where did you study this field? Yeah. When did you become a nutritionist? Where did you study psychology? What art school have you done? You know, that kind of thing. I mean, I studied for 10 years. That's the reaction of the expert. In other words, I'm the expert, therefore what I'm doing must be right, and if you're going to criticize me or tell me anything, then I want to know your credentials. But Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have that attitude. Moshe Rabbeinu was simply interested in the truth. So therefore it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant that he's a greater expert than Yisro, but Yisro saw something. Yes, I'm in this. What you're saying is not... yeah, the thing is like this, whether... That's valid or not valid, whether there's a basis for it or not. That's not what Yisro was talking about.
No, I know, but it's just as a...
No. Then it wouldn't be... I don't think so. I think that Moshe accepted... Because then... No. If that's what was really... Then his criticism wouldn't be objective. Then it wouldn't be valid. If he was making this criticism because he had ulterior motives, then he wouldn't be a rational... That wouldn't be an objective thing. Then speak about the family, that's a separate issue. But he was saying in terms of Klal Yisrael, what you're doing is no good. Now, if Yisrael is to be taken as an honest individual, then we have to...
A logical, rational person,
then we have to accept that on that basis. The critique here was not that Moshe wouldn't have a personal life. By the way, Rashi doesn't take it literally. When it says that from morning until night, yeah. You notice Rashi Rashi didn't take it literally, because Rashi said it's impossible. So Rashi would really remove that question that you're mentioning. He says, after Lomar came, from morning until evening, is it possible to say that? That is to say that that's all Moshe did, was sit and judge? Nobody could live like that. Rather, kol dayin shadan din emes lamito, afu l'sha'acha. You learn out, the Gemara learns out from here, that any judge who judges a case truthfully, din is a very, very important thing. Even for 1 hour, the Torah ascribes it to him as though he's involved in the study of Torah all day long, and as though he becomes a partner with God in the works of creation, as it says, Vayhi Erev, Vayhi Boker. So the Torah used the same expression. Just like by creation it says, Vayhi Erev, Vayhi Boker, here it says, Min Boker Ad Erev. So Rashi is telling us that it doesn't mean that every minute of the day was spent doing this, but a person that judges truthfully brings about a truthful judgment. That's as though he's learning Torah all day long, and he becomes a partner with God in the work of creation.
So how do you want to see Rashi?
Now, the plain shot is like this. The plain shot is, well, let's ask those questions. All right, let's ask the question. What exactly? Let's raise the questions. What are the questions that we should ask upon this parsha? Well, plainly? Okay, so what does it mean? What was his criticism? And there seems to be two aspects to the criticism. One is about the way he's treating the Jews, that he's mistreating them, criticism of that. And also that he himself is not taking care of himself properly. He won't be able to do it. That was his criticism. Well, what's the question in the organization?
He's saying
that
I wasn't as well. It has to do with not being able to...
You have to learn Rashi with a little bit of imagination. You can't be a literalist. No, I'm serious. People tend to take the words literally. The plain shot is that he spent too much time. But Rashi is telling you, but don't take it that literally to mean every second of the day. It doesn't have to mean that. Because even the person is not spending, if Moshe was just spending an hour a day, right, then this whole issue would not have arisen. Moshe was spending by far much too much time. Rashi, however, doesn't want you to think that it literally means from, that's all he did, from morning till evening. But the pasuk will describe it to him as though he did it from morning to evening, because anyone who judges a true din, it's like he's involved in Torah all day long. So both ideas are true.
It's not going against the fact that he was spending...
Yes, he was spending too much time. That you can't argue with, of course. Now, The other question that I'd like to raise is, look at the dialogue between Moshe and Yisrael. Because Yisrael's complaint seems to be pretty obvious, that it's just, well, you've taken upon yourself a job which is too much for one person. What I don't understand is, though, see, in Pasuk 18, he says you'll become too tired. You can't do it. It's too complex for you. You can't do it alone. Fine. Now, I'm sorry.
The word "navol"
is yeah, wither. You'll wither. Like, you'll wither away. Right. You'll wither away. You'll
become something
else, though. See, while you're mentioning it, at first, Moshe defends what he's doing at first. First he said, yeah, what happened? There seems to be a debate going on. Moshe didn't just give in. Right, exactly. First Moshe defends what he's doing. Even after he criticizes him, he says, if you take a look at the development of the discussion, right, the first, Yisro speaks in verse 14, and he ends with a question, why do you sit alone and the entire people is standing over you from morning to evening? Now Moshe, when he answered it, didn't just say you're right. Moshe defends what he's doing. He says, because the people come to me to search out God. And if there's a matter of judgment...
The Lord is God.
Okay. Well, it doesn't say the Lord is God.
Okay.
One second. Lidro Shalokim. Pasuk Tezvav says Lidro Shalokim.
Tezvayim
to search out God. It doesn't say the Lord is God. Ramban does not learn it that way.
Yeah, but Tezvayim says...
Well, he goes on. You have to realize it's more than one thing. He's not repeating himself.
Uh-huh.
He's not repeating himself. Then he says, if there's a matter of judgment, then I must judge. Moshe is making a defense of what he's doing. And then the third thing is Rodati. The Ramban divides his answer into three things. That I make known to them the statutes of God and his Torah. Now, so Moshe has answered and he hasn't given any ground. Then Yisro says, it's no good what you're doing. You'll become too weary. You and the people. Then he said, then he gives his Eitza in 19. He gives his Eitza. And what is the essential Eitza? The essential Eitza is to divide up, you know, to make up a system of court system, of judges, and people, you know, with a whole system of organization, with a hierarchy. But in the answer, there's one pasuk I believe that's out of line. Because he begins his answer in verse, now take a look at verse 19. Listen to my voice and I'll advise you, and God should be with you. You should be the interlocutor. Now then, he should go from there to verse 21. And now select from the people men of strength. What is he doing with, why, I don't understand how Pasuk Chaf fits in. Then he tells them, then you shall teach them the statutes, and what are the people?
No, but in other words, really what he means is to teach
them. Main question, what would you say is the main question? All right, you can explain that Pasuk Chaf. But what's the main question that bothered me in this whole episode is, isn't the advice that Yisro is giving him very obvious? Right, Brett? It seems to be. In other words, the idea that one person cannot do everything, that you have to delegate this to the whole nation, it seems a little bit absurd to imagine that one human being, no matter how great he is, can be the sole judge and take upon himself the entire responsibility of judging the people. How can you do it? So therefore, when you read this, of course Yisro seems to be making a lot of sense. It seems to be obvious, and one wonders how could Moshe Rabbeinu not have thought of this himself. I mentioned I made a big deal out of saying that an outsider can see things that the insider doesn't see, but this is too obvious. Anybody would know, right? Any great leader would know that you've got to have a system by delegating authority and a hierarchy and so on and so forth. He can't do, right? So what I understand is that, yeah, well, Moshe at first is reluctant, he defends what he's doing, then Yisro says it's no good, no bull people, and then Moshe accepts the point, and he implements Yisro's idea. But my question is, what was Moshe's idea?
He's not the guardian of the Torah.
So what's the machlokas? What's the argument? In other words,
God entrusted him with the Torah.
There's
so
a debate.
For
well, was it just a feeling? So then he should have kept it. That's the case. Then why did he give it to Yisro? He should have told Yisro that I'm totally responsible.
Yeah, except look at
that. Because he says a few things. Moshe said, described basically his job description, you might say. Now the first thing is, Kiyavo Eliam Lidrosh Elokim. The people come to me to search out God. But he doesn't say what that means. Then he says, if there's a case, if there's a dispute, they come to me and I judge between the man and his friend.
Right.
Now the third thing is, Vodati Eschuke Elohim via Torosa, and I make known to them the statutes of God and his Torah. So, the Ramban divides it into three categories. That Moshe's job consisted of three functions. I'll read to you the Ramban, translate it to you. It's like this. The people come to me to search out God. Moshe answered his father-in-law. It is necessary for them, because he's explaining why the question is, why do all the people have to stand over you? It's necessary for them to stand over me a long time, a major part of the day, because they come to me for many things. Because the people come to me to search out God. But why are they coming to him? One is to pray for their sick ones. They come to me to ask me to pray for their sick ones. And to let them know that which is lost to them, things that they've lost, because that is called Drishat Elohim, search out for God. And that is what they did with prophets. As it says in Tanakh, it says, Lefnim Yisrael, in the days of old in Israel, this is what a person would say when he went to search out God. Let us go to the Roah. Who said that?
Oh, the Sheol.
By Shaul, when he was looking, he didn't know about Shmuel. He wasn't looking for Shmuel.
But
Shaul was looking for these donkeys. In those days, when we had prophets, a person needed some information, and there was no way he could get it, he would go to the prophet. Perhaps the prophet, through that prophecy, could help him. So Moshe says the people would search out God, which means, of course, only God knows. God knows the future, and the prophet has a way of looking into the causality of what's going to happen in the future. Then he says it also means, it also has the sense of prayer. To pray, people would come and ask Moshe to pray for them, and also to let them know whether their prayers were heard. And that's the first thing. But then he says, I also judge them. Because it says, if they have Yilam Dalaboila, if they have any kind of an issue, they come to me and I judge. And what's the third function? The third function is, I am the teacher. I teach them. It says, that's Maudati Asukir Alokem Yasorosa. So, in other words, Moshe's relationship to the people consists of three things. That he is the source that they turn to when they need, in other words, to be in contact with God. They need information about the future. And Moshe is the prophet, he has insight into the future. And also this includes when they have specific needs, they need the divine intervention, let's put it that way. When the people need divine intervention, that's an interesting idea. The Jews had a special conduit to God. So, in other words, when they were in need of things beyond the natural powers, beyond the natural powers of man, so they had an opportunity. It doesn't mean necessarily that everything would be given to them or answered, but insofar as they had certain needs that went beyond the natural powers of man, they did have an avenue to relate to God through the prophet, through Moshe Rabbeinu, in terms of knowing things that the person couldn't know, or in terms of divine intervention. No, please. Absolutely not. That's not the case. There is no such thing.
Why weren't they being called out directly?
That is not the case. It doesn't matter. No. Very specifically. Excuse me. It's very specific because it doesn't mean that this is not the idea of a Rebbe. Moshe, there is such a phenomenon as prophecy. A prophet has insight into unknown things, into the future, that the average person, that's a valid thing, Nevuah. Now, that's it. The Rebbe doesn't have Nevuah.
Well, the people who follow the Rebbe believe that he does.
The Rebbe does not have Nevuah. No, but he has the truth. Nevuah is an outward study Nevuah. That's an objective phenomenon, and before a person could establish himself as a prophet, he had to meet certain tests, which were very objective. And if he failed to meet those tests, he was chayav misa, he's a false prophet. So no Rebbe that I know of would dare set himself up as a prophet. As far as praying is concerned, one person can pray for another person. It's not just the Rebbe. We say prayers in shul every day. So of course, insofar as a person is on a high level, so his prayers may be more meritorious. But the idea that people impute certain powers to an individual, if that's what they're doing with the Rebbe, that is wrong. There's no basis for that. No person has special powers. We don't believe that Moshe Rabbeinu has special powers. Nobody has powers. Alright, anyways, I don't want to get sidetracked with that. Let me just finish what he said. So those are the three areas. One was, insofar as they needed help with things that they could not work out in the natural framework. The second was judgment, and the third one was teaching. And all of these centered on Moshe. Alright? So what was the criticism of Yisro? According to the Ramban, what did he tell him? Heye atalo amulu elokim, veivesa atas advarim elolokim. That's the first thing. See, it seems from this that Yisro acknowledged that two of these three couldn't be changed. The first one is that you should be Mogan Elohim. That is to say, in that function, in that function that you that you are to them the this, I don't want to word again, but intermediary between them and God, right? So the Ramban says negative Elohim, opposite God. In other words, you should be for them, you should stand for them opposite or before God, to pray to God, to pray to God, and also when they have a need for information that only the prophet would have. That function he agreed. That shouldn't change. Then in verse Chaf, and you shall, the other function of teaching them the Torah. Vizhartes emasachukim yetatoros. That is, vizhartes emasaterach, as a teacher, to teach them the halachos, but also the philosophy, the values. Afiatar v'mitzvot. Shetazirim atam od. Now here's, this is very important, the language of the Ramban. You shall instruct them very forcefully, the talamdei haTorah, and teach them the Torah about mitzvah. So with this, he acknowledged to him that he was correct, that that which he said, that I teach them the statutes of God of the Torah. And he gave them an eitzah here, lahazir osam ma'od, to impress upon them to a great extent, lahasros osam, and to, literally it means to warn them concerning the mitzvot and the punishments for not doing the mitzvot and so forth. So two out of three he acknowledged, but the third thing is where he disagreed. However, when it came to the mishpat, that's, if you take a look at the verse, it fits in very nicely. From 19 he says, listen to my voice and I'll advise you, and God will be with you. The first one is, you shall stay, be in that position as being the one who interprets the word of God to them. Then you should play the role of the teacher and teach them the ideas and the philosophy. However, in verse 21 is where he institutes one difference in the area of judgment. You shouldn't be the judge, except you have to set up a system, depersonalize it, institutionalize it, and he tells them the kind of men they would have to have and set up this hierarchy. And that, and then it says in Chavdei, Peshaktuas Amachaleh, they'll judge the people at all times. And you'll still be involved in it. See, Moshe was still involved in it. How is he involved? Any great matter, any significant matter, and that's not explained over here exactly what that consists of, but great issues that were too difficult for them. Moshe was the Supreme Court. They'll bring to you. But smaller matters, they can judge. And it'll be easier for you, and you'll carry it together. So let's just see if we can, on the basis of this explanation, let's see if we can answer the question. Because basically, what I set out to answer was that, yeah, call Devra Katan, you should do anything. In other words, either the question that we're left with is now, either this system was able to be put into place, Moshe, in other words, there were people who could judge the small matters, the easier issues and problems, and Moshe was only needed for the difficult matters. Yet Moshe was taking up all issues. And now, after hearing this critique from Yisro, he agrees to institute it. So that's what I want to focus in on. But the other two functions he will continue to maintain, because in those functions he's irreplaceable. Nobody could replace Moshe opposite God as being the source to whom they turn to for the knowledge of God's will, and nobody could replace Moshe as the teacher. But in terms of the judge, he was very much replaceable. And I mean, you said something good. In other words, see, there was a trade-off that, on the one hand, by being involved, Moshe apparently felt that he had to be involved in every area, which entailed giving over the Torah. See, this is a crucial point in time, because this was the time of Matan Torah. So it wasn't just a matter that the Jews went to the mountain and they received the Torah, but it had to be implemented. Right? The whole Torah system had to be implemented, it had to be established. And in doing, Moshe was chosen for that role, to make that transition, to establish, that's right. It wasn't just to receive the Torah, but also, that's right, and only Moshe could do it. So there was something unique about Torah's Moshe. There was something unique about Torah's Moshe. One of them. In other words, you see, studying of Torah, it's different. It's not just a matter of knowing certain abstract laws, certain rules, but it's also to be in contact with the knowledge. In other words, when you're studying Torah, you're experiencing Chachmas Hashem. That's an important idea. In other words, a person doesn't just study Torah as a abstract body of ideas, but he has to bear in mind that it brings him into a certain relationship with God. And nobody could do that like Moshe.
Because I'm going with the right balance. He had to make sure that it was important. In other words, he was taking the Torah and not learning it properly.
Okay,
I just want to know at one point. Right? Right. So the Rebbe is the right thing.
There's more to judgment than just the abstract process. In other words, you could punch it into a computer and get the din. That's not the same thing as going before a great teacher or a great rabbi and observing him going through the process.
Right.
So they had to experience. See, their whole experience with the whole learning experience and the whole relationship with Moshe Rabbeinu had to encompass different areas. They had to see him in the guise of the prophet. They had to experience him as a teacher. And also they experienced him in the framework of Mishpat. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu taught. That, in other words, his job of establishing the Jews on the proper foundation to be the people of Torah, that it was incomplete unless he was involved in these three main areas. And certainly nobody could do it as well as him. Alright? But there was only one thing wrong. There's only one problem with that. As far as the first aspect, that was alright. He could do it. Nobody could do it. Well, that was simply impossible. Nobody else could do that. When it came to the other element, the element of teaching and establishing, it's not just to teach abstractly, but you have to implement it in practice. And every case, by the way, when a person goes from Mishpat, it's not just that he finds out what the law is. Do I have to pay or not? But it's a learning experience. As he watches Moshe go through how he handles a case and how he considers it and how he thinks and how he works it out, it's a learning experience. That, I think, that's where the difference of opinion came into the picture. And I think what Malki was saying before was that the involvement in Mishpat was simply something that you can't control. There was no way to control it, and it would just drain off his energy. I think that's novel people. See, to be novel people is like burnout. In other words, to be worn out. Literally, novel people means to be worn out. Exactly. It'll wear you out. Oh God, Martha and them too, because they, as the commentators point out, it's no good for them, because a person. There's two different aspects. Either he'll have to just wait out and let a tremendous amount of time, he'll get exhausted. Or they'd say that you have to have a situation that's pointed out later on. It's no good. Where a person doesn't know, you see, like you go to a doctor sometimes and he's got like a whole office, you can never get him, you know, he tells you to come at 9, you don't see him until 12 or 1. So then very often a person doesn't want to go. He has to, in other words, so a person will have a case, right? He'll have a case. Now, it's not good if these cases aren't judged, adjudicated. Adjudicated. Okay. Now, as long as it's just you, so a person never knows when you're available. So either he's going to go and waste a lot of time, which is not good for the system, or else he won't bother to go altogether, and a lot of things will never get taken care of. That's why it says later on, "Meshaftu esa'am b'chalei." In other words, we have to have a functioning system in place so that a person can get justice immediately. That, now, in doing so, you're losing something. You're losing contact with Moshe Rabbeinu. That's why he says, put greater emphasis, you've got to organize, put greater emphasis in the area of teaching. That's what the Ramban says. Zidarta, in other words, Moshe Rabbeinu was not distributing, was not organizing his energy in terms of what's the most important thing, but rather rather he let the situation dictate to him. He let the situation. He just said, I'm available for the people. I'm available for the people. So when there was an idea to teach, so he would teach. When they came to him for prayer or to know something, he would do that. When it was just, in other words, he was allowing the situation to dictate how he would organize his energy. Because he felt that that's what he has to do. Whatever the people need me for, I have to do it. Until such time as the system is firmly established. Of course, he knew he wouldn't be there forever. But bear in mind that this was a time when they were establishing the system. Yisro took a look at the situation objectively and said that this is not good. This is not good. Rather, you've got to make a decision. Where are you going to withdraw? You could be, in other words, your primary objective is to be the teacher. I think that's what he said over here. That's what they're quoting in Ramban. So he says, "V'hizarta etzem es achukim." If you take a look at Ramban, he says, "You teach them the way." V'todiyu lehem et haderech asher yelchu bo al pi haTorah v'mitzvah. She'tasirim atam ma'od. You shall warn them and teach them a great deal, and teach them the Torah v'mitzvah. See, in other words, I think the way the Rambam learned this was an Eitzah. It wasn't just repeating or acknowledging, but he was giving him the advice to place his major focus on the teaching role. Teach them, explain to them, imbue it in them. That's where you should put your major. That's right. That's right. That's the most important thing. Now, as far as the judgment is concerned, it's better if you draw back from that. And you establish a system. You establish a system. Well, you're part of it, because, of course, you can't be completely eliminated from it. You can't be completely eliminated from it. You have to be there for the great decisions, which the lower courts can't handle. But it's better that you withdraw, and that they will have justice. In other words, the practical and the fact that they can get justice quickly is much more important than you should be involved. Even though qualitatively, from a qualitative standpoint, the mishpat of Moshe is better. But you have a choice. You can't do all three. You have to reorganize your whole approach. In the reorganization, that's the way it should be. Okay, Jack? In other words, what we're saying is that Moshe simply made himself available for all three aspects. So he let the situation play a role, would determine where he would be. He's just available. And Yisro said that that's an impossibility. You can't just be available. You have to take the initiative, and you have to organize yourself. And the way to do it is by putting the emphasis, of course, Mulha Elokim, that's fine. And aside from that, direct your energy towards teaching and warning and establishing the foundation. As far as the justice is concerned, that has to be systematized. That was his answer. Moshe held that he has to be involved in every aspect of it. Every aspect has to be from Moshe. Because his quality, exactly. The Torah of Moshe had a certain quality to it that could not be achieved from anybody else. And therefore, that's what he did. However, you see, the thing is like this. The person who is organizing, the person who is performing, is not always in a good position to evaluate the performance. He's not in a good position. You see, a good teacher should have some sense of whether he's coming across or not. But it can never be. In judgment, first of all, he's involved in teaching, and he's not involved in observation. And also, his judgment is not always accurate. Sometimes the teacher can't read the mood of the class. He doesn't know. He has his own criteria. Sometimes he feels it was a great class, and it's not the case. Sometimes he feels he didn't come across, and quite the contrary. Because he's looking, he can't, you know, he doesn't have like objective criteria, assessment. So I would say that Moshe's approach was logical to Moshe. It made sense, as we said, because he held that he had to be involved in every area. But then there's the issue of assessment. And those people who were too closely involved couldn't make the proper assessment. At a certain point, an assessment had to be made. And that was the role of Yisro.
Yusuf was very great at being able to make an assessment, objective assessment. And Moshe's greatness was that he fully accepted it. He did not take it personally. And he was happy. He was happy that somebody came to him and who was in a position who had the chachma and also the objectivity to make a proper assessment. On the basis of that assessment to create a new derech. To make a decision, we have to move away from that. That was necessary until now. We have to have a new derech. So that would explain why Moshe himself couldn't come to that conclusion. Because the person that was performing couldn't be the judge of his own performance.